WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, here on WKAR AM 870, as well as FM 94.5. We've got a ton to talk about in the local sports world and beyond. On today's Current Sports, we, of course, will be chatting about Tom Anastas, now former Michigan State hockey coach. Yes, Anastas announced in a statement yesterday that he will be stepping down. So now the coaching search begins for Mark Hollis and those associated with that program. We will invite live to Studio S, Mr. Jason Ruff, Michigan State hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports, former Current Sports production assistant, who is all things Spartan hockey, or I should say all things hockey in general. So he's going to be live here in studio to talk about the possible candidates that are in the running, in his view, to replace Coach Anastas and what led to this move. I think Stevie Wonder could have saw this one coming. I don't think that anyone saw it coming yesterday, though. So I'll give my spill on that. Jay Ruff will join us live in studio. We'll chat with that. We will also talk about the Detroit Pistons fighting for their playoff lives. An ugly loss last night to the Brooklyn Nets. Pistons right in the thick of things in that game, but they lose to one of the NBA's worst teams. Not looking good as the Pistons are trying to just at least get an 8 spot to etch their way into the playoffs. We'll chat about that. Also, we will continue our conversation on the NBA and, of course, this whole notion of sitting star players, resting star players in time for the NBA playoffs. You'll get our thoughts on that, and we will talk briefly about one local team here in the area that has made it to the Breslin Center. How about that? As the high school boys basketball semis and finals will be taking place this weekend, we've got one local school still in the dance. You'll find out who that school is in just a moment in our quick hit headliners. And before we dive into the thick of things, when it comes to our headliners, I want to bring this news to your attention if you haven't already heard. But documents obtained by the Lansing State Journal show an MSU official has found that Dr. Larry Nassar to have sexually assaulted a then 15-year-old girl during several medical appointments, which occurred 17 years ago. Now, this is the first conclusion by a MSU Title IX investigator that has agreed with any of at least 80 women or girls who have sued Michigan State University and Nassar over alleged sexual assaults. The determination by the investigator comes 2.5 years after another Title IX investigation by Michigan State University involving similar allegations against Nassar, which cleared him. Shocking stuff there, folks. All right, let's dive into the rest of our quick hit headliners. Let's go. All right, and we start again with Michigan State, now former head coach of the hockey program. Tom Anastas has stepped down from his position after his sixth year at the helm. Anastas was hired in 2011 with a plan to turn around the Spartan hockey program. However, in six seasons, the team was over 500 one time. How about that? Actually, two times, excuse me. Now, when you look at it, this past season, the Spartan hockey team was a dreadful 7-24-4. This was Anastas' worst season in his 6 years. The last time MSU hockey won less than 10 games was during the 1977-78 year, where the team was 7-27-2 under head coach Amo Bisogni. In just a moment, we will talk about that news that broke yesterday with MSU hockey beat reporter Jason Ruff. You don't want to miss that conversation. This morning, Michigan State football began its pro day A little more than 2 weeks after Malik McDowell, Riley Bullitt, and Monte Nicholson were in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine, Pro Day allows more Spartans to be evaluated for NFL scouts ahead of the draft. NFL hopefuls likely to participate today include wide receivers R.J. Shelton and Monty Medeiros, tight end Josiah Price, defensive lineman Brandon Clemens, safety Demetrius Cox, linebacker Ed Davis, offensive lineman Cody Keeler, and Benny McGowan. Also quarterback Tyler O'Connor, running back Delton Williams, fullback Prescott Line, and kicker the great Michael Geiger. Moving on, in its season opener at Cobbs Field, MSU baseball defeated Central Michigan University 11-2, a good old-fashioned butt-kicking there. All nine Spartans in the batting lineup received at least one hit. Third baseman Marty Bacina led the way, going four, with two RBIs and three runs scored. Now, the top three in MSU's batting lineup combined for eight of the team's 11 runs. MSU baseball now 12-5 on the year. Head coach Jake Boss Jr. now has 301 wins as head coach in 10 seasons, 276 of those wins with Michigan State University in nine of those 10 seasons. MSU softball will be in South Bend, Indiana this afternoon to face the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The Lady Spartans are 15-7 this season and are led by junior outfielder Leah Forrester. She leads the team with a batting average of .457, 33 runs scored, 32 hits, 11 doubles, and 7 homers. Her slugging percentage sits at an amazing 97.1. Oddly enough, she has been hit by a pitch 10 times already this year. The rest of the team has been hit 14 times. Maybe there's a vendetta against Forrester. That's a crazy stat. This will be the home opener for the Fighting Irish, who sit at 12-13 this season. In the MHSAA Class D State Tournament, the Lansing Christian boys basketball team secured a spot out on the Breslin floor, I should say, after yesterday's dub against Dream Academy. 63-45, the final of that one. They will have a tough state semi tomorrow, 7:50 p.m., when they face 25-0 Buckley. Pretty good team. If Buckley empowers North Central from the other semifinal matchup advance, the final will feature two undefeated teams. What a year for Buckley and Powers North Central. Also in Class D, Fowler fell to Southfield Christian 64-42. No Breslin Dance for Fowler and no Breslin Dance for the Williamston Hornets. That's right. In the Class B state tourney, Willie season has come to a close after falling to River Rouge by 3 points. A buzzer beater, to be exact. Oh, I saw those highlights last night and I couldn't believe it. 64-61. Willie coming just short of going to the Breslin yet again. Really felt bad for the Hornets. All right, last night in BK, the Detroit Pistons took on the Brooklyn Nets. Suffered a heartbreaking loss to the Nets. Sounded a bit like this.
Looking for the win. Foy, the trigger man, lobs it to Lopez. Lopez at the buzzer. It's good!
The Pistons rallied back from an 11-point deficit in the fourth quarter to tie the game with 2.6 left. Moments later, as you heard, Brook Lopez crushed any hope of the game going into OT when he shot a buzzer beater before the clock ran out. We'll have more on the Pistons in just a second. They will take on the Chicago Bulls tonight. And the Detroit Red Wings have shown that they still have some fight left.
Outside his own line with it, under a minute to go in the overtime. Radulov trying to pick off the Kaiser. Mantha up with a puck. Nifty move. Mantha scores! Anthony Mantha, the overtime winner. What a play. What a shot. And what a goal for a 2-1 Red Wings victory.
6'5", 221 pounds, but he's like a ballerina on his skates. An absolute beautiful finish as he goes top shelf over the glove of Al Montoya.
Yes, Anthony Mantha carried the team last night, scoring with 49 seconds left in OT to give the Winged Wheel a 2-1 dub over the Montreal Canadiens. All right, folks, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are open 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. So much to get to, so little time. Let's start the show. I must be honest with you all. Welcome to this afternoon's WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. You're listening via, of course, AM 870. Or, again, we are on FM now, 94.5 FM. Pretty exciting stuff. You can also join us via Facebook.com/Current Sports, where we are currently live streaming the show. And, of course, you can join the conversation via Twitter. At Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR underscore sports. We've got a lot to get to. And in just a moment, I'm going to get to my Detroit Pistons. Boy, oh boy, it is tough to be a professional sports fan in the city of Detroit. The Detroit Red Wings, the longest North American postseason streak, will certainly come to an end this year. The Red Wings in the bottom barrel of the NHL. And the Detroit Pistons, which, you know, this is a team that looked pretty promising a few weeks ago, right? Possibly, people were talking about possibly the Pistons getting a 6-5 seed, maybe. And my, oh my, how things change so quickly. The Pistons just trying to get an 8 seed, folks. It's ugly. It's ugly. Especially when you lose to the lowly Brooklyn Nets. Come on, man. I could go 1-on-5 against the Nets and still pull out a dub. All right, maybe I'm tooting my horn a little too much there. But still, you don't lose to the Brooklyn Nets. That was so bad. So we're going to break down the playoff chances of the Detroit Pistons in just a moment. Again, we want to hear your thoughts on anything on your sports noggin. Comment on the Pistons as the season now winds down. I believe they have, like, what, Isaac, like 11 games left, dude?
11 yeah, a games lot of left. Teams, 11, 12 games left in the season.
They got to beat Chicago tonight. They have to beat the Bulls tonight. It is really, really bad. It's crunch time now. It's win or go home. So we'll break down that in just a moment. And then later on this hour, we will also continue the NBA conversation when it comes to certain coaches out there in the association resting star players. We previewed that conversation at the end of yesterday's show. Didn't get a chance to elaborate more on it, so we'll get to that, and also we'll highlight Lansing Christian. How about Lansing Christian booking the ticket to the Breslin Center, our only local team here in mid-Michigan that made it to the semis of high school boys basketball. Congratulations to Lansing Christian. Really felt bad, though, for Fowler and Williamson, especially Williamson, the way they lost last night on a buzzer beater, that hurt. But, of course, we have to address the biggest news. It's not often that Michigan State hockey leads the show. Heck, I don't even know if that's ever happened. I think one time it has happened, and the reason why is because we debated Tom Anastas, how long Tom Anastas would keep his job as head coach of the Michigan State hockey program. Well, as most of you know by now, unless you've been living under a rock, Tom Anastas has decided to step down after a two-day conversation with Michigan State Athletics Director Mark Hollis. So now a coaching search begins, and the news surprised me, but it didn't surprise me that Michigan State decided to move on. And I want to elaborate on this by saying this. You know, I looked at it and said this. You know, with everything that's taking place right now when it comes to the wheelhouse of Michigan State University Athletics, I pondered whether or not Mark has so much other stuff to deal with right now when it comes to the whole sexual assault investigation concerning Michigan State football, when it comes to the Dr. Larry Nassar investigation, which has made national headlines and news. You know, I pondered whether or not Mark wanted to add something else to his laundry list of things to do. MSU hockey, not really being an immediate priority in relation to MSU football and that investigation, as well as the Dr. Larry Nassar situation. So I pondered whether or not Mark would even bother this year with going through a coaching search process and moving on from head coach Tom Anastas. Well, Mark doesn't shy away from anything, and he felt like a move needed to be made. And I think that was the general consensus of Michigan State hockey fans everywhere. Just to read a few comments here, when this news broke, we actually rolled it in. I came back and put together a quick reader for All Things Considered that afternoon, and our very own Kevin Lavery rolled that in. But, you know, when I posted it on our social media website at facebook.com/currentsports and also my Instagram and my Twitter page, I got a few responses from you all. We just want to read a few comments from Michigan State fans out there. This one comes from Ben, one of our dear listeners. Quote, knew this was coming. It was just a matter of time. We enjoyed having him here, and we enjoyed having him around. We wish him the best of luck in the future, but in the end, it's all about winning and improving the hockey program. Very well said, Ben. I think that's the general thought, right? JL says, quote, we knew it was going to happen. 21 and Huff says, quote, it was time for a change. Michigan State should be a competitive hockey program every year. And Luke H. Ferris says, quote, great guy, and he'll always be a Spartan, but this should have happened 2 years ago. Hopefully, it's not too late to resurrect this once-proud program. So as you see, the general thoughts when it comes to Tom Anastas now moving on from Michigan State University as the head coach of the Spartan hockey program, the general thought is that, yeah, we saw this coming. We saw this coming. You come off a year where you just win 7 games. Didn't win a home game after November 4th. Really tough stuff, right? And going back to the hire of Tom Anastas, when Tom was hired in 2011, a lot of people viewed it as an abnormal hire in the first place, right? Let's keep it real here. I mean, Tom worked as an assistant under the great Ron Mason from 1990 to 92. And then he went on to do a fantastic job at the now defunct Central Collegiate Hockey Association. He did a great job for 13 years as the commish of the CCHA. So when hiring Anastas from the CCHA, you know, not having a lot of coaching experience at that level, only 2 years under Ron Mason, a lot of people looked at it and said, not sure about this one. Great guy, but really, can he really win? That was the big question, right? Anastas was 78, 122, and 24 in six seasons at MSU. Guided the Spartans. These are doing the good times. And this is what gave a lot of people hope at first, right? He guided the Spartans to a berth in the 2012 NCAA tournament after going 19, 16, and 4 in his first season behind the bench. In 2014-15, another year where the Spartans were over 500, right? A 17, 16, and 1 record, finished second in the Big Ten regular season standings. Only two winning years, though. Only 2 years where this program was over 500. And again, as I mentioned in our headliners, this announcement comes after two straight 20-loss seasons, as well as a 7-24-4 record this past year. The program's worst showing since 1978. Great guy. Great guy. We've had time on this show, on this program, multiple times. Multiple times. Always loved talking with Tom. Classy guy. He was always one that made the Michigan State hockey program accessible. Always willing to do interviews. Always willing to, if you want to do a feature, always, you know, having that door open for you to come and sit in on practice, talk to him, talk to his players. Loved it. Loved it. Great PR guy. But when it comes to coaching, again, maybe coaching just does not suit Tom Anastas. And I wish him well. I wish him well. But this was the kicker here for me. In combination with the losing, when you would go to a Michigan State hockey game at Mud Ice Arena and you would look around and there were just glaring pockets of empty seats. Glaring pockets of empty seats, folks. When you stop making money and when you start hurting a once proud fan base due to losing, a change is inevitable. The atmosphere at Mud Ice Arena started to become subpar. And, you know, it's interesting when you look at the history of Spartan hockey, because during the Ron Mason days, and I hear this countless times from those seasoned reporters who've been around for a long time and have been covering this program and Michigan State sports for quite a long time. They always talk about a moment before Tom Izzo, before the MSU football team was really rolling. You know, the MSU football team up and down, very inconsistent. The basketball team struggling. Ron Mason and that MSU hockey program, that was a sport. That was a program that you could always count on. Regardless of what was taking place in the major sports like football and basketball, Ron Mason's hockey program was one that you can always count on to be consistently relevant, consistently competitive, just consistently good. Ron Mason established that kind of winning consistency. I can only imagine what that is now. I mean, people talk about they would go to Munn back in the day. You know, and the atmosphere was crazy. Spartan hockey was winning. My, oh, my, how things have changed. What are your thoughts? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Right now, we invite live here in Studio S. He is a man who knows all things MSU hockey, has been covering the team for quite some time now. He's a former current sports production assistant, MSU hockey beat reporter now for Impact Sports. We now invite to the show Jason Ruff. Jason, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing all right, Al, especially after this news came. I mean, when it came down, my phone's blowing up. I know you and I had a quick little conversation about it. And just to echo off words that you said, I think this was a move that needed to happen. And while everyone says they saw this coming, I think everyone hoped this would happen, but I do think there was some doubt. Rightfully so. I remember you and I talking about this before as to whether or not it would. Again, so much other stuff on Hollis's plate. Would he take the time to make that change and commit to a coaching search? I think by doing this now, and Hollis shows that hockey should be the number three sport at this university and is going to devote sufficient time to it.
And Jay Ruff, you and I have rapped about this countless times when discussing this program. And I want to ask you, when you heard the news come through the wire that Tom was deciding to step down after conversating with MSU AD Mark Hollis. Were you surprised at the timing? Because I believe that you and I, when we would have these conversations, we believed that it was coming. We just didn't know when.
You know, I'll be dead honest here. I was not too surprised with the timing here. I had heard a lot of rumblings over the weekend about there possibly being a change, NASA's maybe looking for other work or whatnot.
Happening this soon?
Happening soon, yes.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, I don't know if that's real credible. I mean, it's rumors. It's scuttlebutt right now. But, you know, after talking to some people, there was a lot of smoke starting to build. And, you know, where there's smoke, there may be a fire. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking, okay, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen this week. Didn't happen on Monday, and it happened on Tuesday, which the timing made sense.
When you look at this now, for Tom Anastas, again, great guy. And I also think he's a great hockey mind as well.
He is.
I would pick Tom's brain. You know, my hockey knowledge is very on the surface. So I would pick his brain about certain things about, you know, and he was very bold. I remember this too. When Tom was hired, it was when I was a junior here at Michigan State University. And I remember during his presser, he was very honest in letting everybody know that these are my expectations. I expect this team to compete for championships, to make deep runs in the NCAA tournament. And people will look at that and say, okay, I love the way this guy is talking right now. But can he legit get the job done? When you look at his experience was very light. Why did Michigan State hire Tom Anastas, do you think, in 2011? What, such a young coach, not really proven. Why was this hire so abnormal? Why do you think they went that route?
I think they needed someone to market the program. You have to remember, Michigan State at that time was coming off of Rick Comley, who was an established coach, won a national championship here back in 2007. Mm-hmm. But the program had kind of stagnated. After 2008, things went downhill. Football and basketball. Well, basketball was already there, but football was starting to come back. So I think Hollis needed someone to kind of reinvent the Spartan hockey program and get people excited. And I think that's one of the reasons he went with Anastas. And as you and I have talked about, for the first year or so, it worked. They made the national tournament. People were coming to Munn. People were winning. But then after that, you know, things just went downhill. And just to briefly touch on the attendance this year, Michigan State hockey's total attendance was only 72,000, good for 13th in the nation. Now, 13th out of 60 is pretty good. But when you consider that Michigan State usually hangs in the 8 to 10 range, their average, I think, is about 9th in the nation. That's well below average for them, and they were by far and away dead last in attendance in the Big Ten.
And that's very telling when you have a drop like that. Why wasn't Tom able to make that turn, to turn the corner and really get this program to a place of national relevance? Because I think that you bring up an interesting point with Comley. When Anastas took over that position, he did have to deal with, and Graham Couch highlights this in today's Lansing State Journal, he did have to deal with Comley's recruits sticking around. That wasn't Tom Anastas' recruiting class when he first came in. He had to deal with a lot of players that were part of the Comley system and had to wait a few years until they graduated and moved on and Tom could get his recruits in the fold. But then the biggest excuse you would hear when it comes to MSU hockey was that, okay, these are Tom's recruits, but they're so young. Well, that excuse went out the window when those young pups became juniors and seniors, and they still weren't winning. Why wasn't Tom able to reach those guys?
I think it's a twofold. There's a lot of points as we can talk about. Hell, we could dedicate a whole show to why Tom Anastas didn't win. But I think boiling it down to the two main points, I think it comes down to Tom being unable to get the big-name recruits that Michigan State needed, guys who could be counted on to come in immediately, contribute big minutes and big points. And I think the inability of some of Tom's recruits to develop exponentially. You remember 2 years ago when Michigan State got second in the Big Ten, the following year they were picked to compete again, and they were a very senior-laden team. Those seniors did not step up and contribute like seniors, and that's why Michigan State had only a 10-win season.
Now the coaching search begins.
It does.
Jay Ruff, I've heard a plethora of names thrown out there. I mean, I was just sitting online today and reading different articles from LSJ to the Freep. I saw Twitter polls out there with a few names left and right. I even heard Jeff Blashill's name, current Detroit Red Wings coach, thrown around. And, you know, at first I chuckled, But then when really breaking it down, and again, Graham Couch highlights this in the LSJ
as well. He does.
A bad year for the Red Wings. Horrible year when you take into account the expectations that are surrounded around the Detroit Red Wings, right? When Blashill was a coach at WMU, he had great success in just 1 year.
Only 1 year, though.
Gets him there to the tournament, though, and everybody says, what if? What if Blashill stuck around with WMU? How good could he have made that program? So I can see where Graham is going there a little bit, but when it comes to you, who are the leading candidates for this job?
There are a couple leading candidates, and for Spartan hockey fans out there, this isn't all that hard. My first candidate, I have four major ones, and I have an article coming out this afternoon that highlights all these guys, goes into them in much detail. Mm-hmm. Go check it out at impactsports.com. MSUImpactSports.com, I should say. My first pick is George Gwozdecki, former assistant coach with Mason, arguably his best assistant ever. Assistant here from 84 to 89. Has a championship ring from that 86 team. He convinced guys like Rob Brind'Amour to come here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really top-notch guys. Head coach over at Miami of Ohio. Two-time national championship winner with Denver in 2004-2005. Currently coaching Valor Christian High School in Highland Ranch, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gwozdecki would be a major hire. It would be a good hire for Michigan State. The only issue here is that he's old. He's 63 mm-hmm. years old. So you may get 3, 4, maybe 5 more years out of him. But he has the coaching experience, the know-how, and the resume
mm-hmm.
to come in and to this Spartan hockey team, and there's some good talent on this team. There's a decent foundation
mm-hmm.
with an easy schedule next year. I fully think that a guy like Gwozdecki could come in, mold this team into a winning, if not competitive, unit.
So if they reach out to George, and George says, you know what, I'm 63, I'm happy where I am, what other names do you think can be thrown around here?
Well, the other one is that the one every Spartan hockey fan knows, and that's Danton Cole.
Danton Cole, right. I think they're neck and neck when it comes to George Gwozdecki and Danton Cole of USA Hockey's national team development program.
How about this for a dream team? Gwozdecki comes in for coach for 3 or 4 years. You bring in Danton Cole as his assistant and heir apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a dream team, Al. To put it into basketball terms to illustrate this, that'd be like Greg Popovich with Steve Kerr as his assistant.
That good.
That's a combination that makes some of Michigan State's rivals quake in their boots, I think.
Okay. And look at Danton Cole's resume, it's pretty impressive,
it
too.
It is. It is quite impressive. Michigan State player, won a national championship back in 86, won a cup with the New Jersey Devils back in 95, coached 3 years with the University of Alabama Huntsville, taking them to the NCAA tournament. That's a feat in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really hard to get hockey going in Alabama, Huntsville. Currently coaches for the U.S. National Team Development Program. He's had great success at it. Has coached players like Dylan Larkin and Jack Eichel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has the recruiting chops to really do well in the state of Michigan, and that's key for Michigan State. Like, if you walk into a prospect's door and all you need just flop down your resume and say, I coach Dylan Larkin, Jack Eichel, and just start listing off names, kids are going to listen.
For sure, right.
And here's what I really thought was interesting. The day Anastas stepped down,
mm-hmm.
beg my pardon, Cole was, you know, asked about it, and he called MSU's job a dream job. It's his alma mater. Furthermore, Cole went on record for indicating that he'd be willing to serve as an advisory role for Mark Hollis in Michigan State hockey, saying, or paraphrasing, to say that now is a time for all Spartans to come together. Al, he wants this job.
I can tell.
He wants this job. Assistant coach, head coach, recruiting coordinator, get Danton Cole and make him a part of this program, because that can do nothing but help this program.
That's why I think Cole is leading the charge right now. I saw those comments and I said, oh, yeah.
I think so.
I think Cole may be the guy to step in here.
And he has the personality, he has the credibility to really get people excited. Another name that's a little bit out of left field, but Nate Lehman, the current head coach at Providence College,
mm-hmm.
brought Union back, brought Providence back, a little bit out of left field. But, you know, Michigan State has a lot more resources than Providence, a lot more prestige. Big Ten's a better conference than Hockey East, or at least an easier one to break into. Lehman is, he's proven to bring programs back. Could he work his magic at Michigan State? That's a possibility.
Right.
And finally, my other big one is Chris Bergeron, the coach at Bowling Green, did really well with bringing the Falcons back as a power in the WCHA. You know, the last time Michigan State went to go get a coach from Bowling Green is a fellow by the name of Ron Mason. I think they might do pretty good. But, you know, there's some other names. You know, Jeff Jackson, Notre Dame, I don't think he's going to come. I mean, Notre Dame's coming to the Big Ten.
Yeah, they are, which is very interesting in itself. I'm going to have another conversation about Notre Dame joining the Big Ten later on. We got to get you back on for that. But, yeah, I think that's just a very interesting conversation. Yeah. Okay.
Bob Daniels at Florida State. Same with Damon Witten. Both are MSU grads. I don't think that's what Michigan State needs right now.
Yeah.
I think Mark Hollis needs to make a big splash with this hire, needs to go out, make a big name, get Spartan fans excited to come to the rink, get the fans, get the recruits, get the current players excited. And I think Hollis will make a big splash with this hire.
Jay Ruff, before we get you out of here, when we look back at the six-year tenure of Tom Manassas for Michigan State hockey, how do you think he will be remembered?
I think he'll be remembered the way he should be remembered, is a loyal Spartan who came in and did his best. Unfortunately, the wins just weren't there. Tom Manassas has nothing to hang his head about. He's only stepping down because Michigan State did not get wins on the ice. College coaches in all kinds of sports have resigned, been relieved for a heck of a lot worse.
And I like the way he put it as well. He said, you know what? As a leader, you have to look at things and say to yourself, okay, what's best for the program? And right now, I believe me stepping down is the best move. Jay Ruff, MSU hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports. Jay Ruff, remind folks how they can follow you on Twitter and also read your work.
At Jason_R_Ruff on Twitter. All my work is at MSUImpactSports.com. An article about Tom Anastas' resignation is already up there. We have an article coming about that goes into more detail of the possible coaching candidates coming out this afternoon, as is our podcast where we break it all down, Anastas' resignation, why this happened now, and where does MSU hockey go from here. Great stuff. I encourage all of your listeners to take it up and listen and read if you're really interested about where does MSU hockey go from here. Al, there's a lot more optimism surrounding this program now than there was 24 hours ago. I think that's a good first step.
It is, and I think you guys are doing a great job. Also, our very own Jacob Herbert is working
really
with you.
He's doing really well. My co-host is wonderful. Love that man to death.
He's great. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will keep the current sports train a-moving by talking about the Detroit Pistons. Yeah, the red, white, and royal blue fighting for a playoff spot. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, join the convo. Pick up the phone. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We just finished up a chat with Jason Ruff, MSU hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports, former Current Sports PA, as we talked about Tom Manassas, now former Michigan State hockey coach, stepping down after six seasons with the program. Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. You didn't get a chance to chime in on this, Isaac. Just thoughts, brief thoughts on this whole situation. I don't think anyone's really surprised that it occurred.
You and I got chewed out about halfway through the season, Al, for suggesting that this might occur. Unfortunately, sometimes a hire is a positive move. And, you know, you need a new direction for a program moving forward. Like you mentioned, this is a team that was a little bit lost in the sand. They didn't know where they were going, and they should be on the ice. They just were entirely without direction recently, and the program was declining. It's that simple. When you are on the decline without too much sign of an uphill ahead, you've kind of got to make a move. So I like Anastas a lot. He's a really nice guy. I think he's a great administrator. I think he's going to be great in a role once again in some program. But I think his role might be more suited what he did before MSU, which is something more, again, from an administrative standpoint, where he's delegating roles, where he's making big decisions. But when it comes to coaching on the ice, the fervor wasn't there. The energy wasn't there for MSU. They couldn't get their wins up. They couldn't get the fan base galvanized. And when all that happens, you know what? It's the perfect culmination for a new move in the future. So it's hard to take issue with this move. I think at the very least, you can argue that maybe he should have been given a little more time. I don't think many people make that argument. I sure don't.
But I don't
the
either.
Thing is,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's hard to misconstrue this as a bad move. If nothing else, you take it and you say, okay, let's keep going forward, see what we can do.
Agreed. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And speaking of trending upward, this team is doing the exact opposite. The Detroit Pistons, folks, I have to talk about it. And you can, Isaac's laughing at me right now because you can see the disgust. Those who are tuned in via Facebook
Pelicans
right now.
Pelicans are 6-7. Meanwhile, folks, in the last seven games.
Here we go. Here we go. I'm a big Detroit Pistons fan, so it pains me to have this conversation, but it's a real one. The Detroit Pistons right now are playing awful. I can't even mince words here. That's just the reality of the situation right now. They couldn't have picked a worse time to play the way they're playing because they don't have many games left, folks. We are entering the home stretch of the regular season, and the Detroit Pistons currently sit three games below 500, 34-37. And with yesterday's heartbreaking loss to the awful Brooklyn Nets, courtesy of a Brook Lopez left baseline jumper, the Pistons fell behind the Miami Heat for the Eastern Conference's eighth and final playoff spot. The Pistons are now 1-6 in their last two seasons in road games against the New York Nets. Well, excuse me, the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks. Now, it's the second loss of the season in Brooklyn for the Pistons. I thought it was cool to note this, though. Former U of M standout, Caris LeVert, who, of course, went to the NBA last year. He scored 15 for the Nets. And get this, the Nets have only won 14 games this season. 14-56 on the year, and the Pistons lose. Gotta be kidding me, man. Former Pistons Spencer Dinwiddie scored 10 points, grabbed 8 boards, and this is the conversation that has loomed over this franchise all year. Reggie Jackson. There were no teams willing to shell out a lot of money to take on Jackson from the Pistons, so he is still a part of this squad. Reggie Jackson, 7 points, 3-for-9, 2 assists in 20 minutes. Once again, a minuscule performance from Reggie Jackson. The team as a whole, and this has to change as well, the Pistons, if you are going to compete in today's National Basketball Association, you are going to have shooters on your team that can knock down the three ball. It's become that important now. That's how the game has evolved now. You have to have guys that can knock down three-point shots if you want to win in today's NBA. The Pistons shot 5-for-23 from three-point range last night. Could only manage to score 35 points over the course of the second and third quarters against a team who plays no defense in the 14-56 Brooklyn Nets. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I don't get why Stan Van Gundy continues to do this. I love Stan. I think, again, Stan knows the game. I love him as a coach. He's so honest. I think he knows what he's doing, but not when it comes to this conversation. I got to criticize Stan Van for this. I don't understand why he continuously starts Reggie Jackson over and over and over when Ish Smith has proven multiple times throughout this year that he can run this offense more efficiently. In the fourth, Ish Smith scored 12 of his 16 points, and he is ideally the one who kept the Pistons in the game as I sat back watching that debacle. 12 of his 16 points in the fourth quarter. Then I don't understand this. And I'm at the point now when it comes to Andre Drummond, even though he has so much potential when his head is in the game, but the dude does not play any defense. He allowed Brook Lopez to just go off. 29 points, 7 rebounds, dude. Andre is a walking double-double. He can do that in his sleep. That's why it doesn't even impress me anymore. When I see Andre Drummond's stat line. You know, he had 13 points, 17 boards last night. Cool. He does that. That's what he does. But when it comes to impacting the game on both ends of the floor, it's like, you know, he's willing to score and willing to grab boards. But when it comes to barreling down and guarding the NBA's weak front court, he just doesn't do it. I don't get it sometimes with Andre Drummond. KCP, want to mention him. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 24 points. 19 points for KCP, 24 for Tobias Harris, who has been a shining light for this season. I do like Tobias Harris a lot. He actually scored the bucket to tie the game. I thought that was going to push the game into overtime. But to go back to this conversation about Ish Smith, you know, Smith, let's just look at the numbers last night, folks. For those that are still having this ridiculous conversation that Reggie Jackson should still be a part of this roster and should still be starting over Ish Smith, I just don't understand the argument. Smith entered the game in the first quarter. Pistons, at the time, were down by 2 points. By the time the first was done, the Pistons took a 31-22 lead in the second quarter. But what does Stan Van Gundy do? He decided to say, I'm going to ignore that, and I'm going to throw on Reggie Jackson to start the second quarter. Well, what happens in that quarter? It's another thing about Reggie. Reggie, we all know Reggie Jackson can score, even though he's had some bad shooting nights, multiple bad shooting nights this year with the Pistons, because he forces up a lot of shots. But Reggie plays no defense. That's another thing about him. Ish will get out there, and he won't force his offense. He'll take a shot if it's there, but he won't force it. He's a pass-first point guard. But Ish will barrel down on the defensive end. He loves playing defense. That's what I enjoy about Ish Smith. But you put in Jackson to start the second, and the Nets immediately go on a 7-0 run. Now, I'm not saying that was all on the shoulders of Reggie Jackson, but there were a few plays there where Reggie didn't bother to play defense, lets his man go right by him, and the Nets start to garner momentum from the Pistons. I don't get it. I'm confused now. You know, I can't get a read. You talk about can't get in the read, and I talked about this multiple times this season when it comes to MSU men's basketball. I can't read the Detroit Pistons. I don't know. Effort is something that is up and down this year. When it comes to that point guard position, I don't know why Reggie is playing more than Ish Smith right now when the proof is in the pudding there. Pistons fans like myself have to be beyond frustrated when watching this team. So now you're in a dogfight. The Pistons will take on the Chicago Bulls tonight, a team that has to be foaming at the mouth looking at what took place last night against the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors actually snapping a very long losing streak against the Chicago Bulls last night. I believe they were on like a 11-game losing streak against the Chicago Bulls. Toronto getting out of the doghouse there. And now you play a Chicago team that is going to be motivated tonight. And I can't guarantee that the Pistons are going to show up. I just don't know with this team anymore. So you look at the playoff standings, the Pistons behind the Miami Heat. Miami Heat, who, by the way, have played outstanding since the All-Star break. The Miami Heat sit at 35-36. The Pistons at 34-37. You got the Bulls in the race. Again, more motivation for the Bulls, sitting at 33-38. I don't know if the Bulls are going to make the playoffs, though. That's a tall order. But it is frustrating watching this team, folks. Even if the Pistons, and again, it would have been better. I mean, you don't want to play the Cleveland Cavaliers, the favorites in the NBA's Eastern Conference, for a second year straight. Now, granted, it wasn't an easy sweep for LeBron James and company last year, but it was a sweep nonetheless. You don't want to play the Cavaliers yet again, but if that's the goal, just to make the playoffs, that's what you're going to get. And I don't even know if the Pistons are going to make the playoffs now. I'm done with this conversation, though, Isaac. If you want to chime in, go ahead, dude.
Yeah, Andre Drummond, I think, has been maybe the most disappointing member of this roster, because this is somebody who hasn't necessarily had his due share of personality issues before in the locker room, whatnot. But he just shows up as indolent, lazy on the court every single time. Every time you've got a center who stretches the court a little bit, or who has a little bit of speed, or just that it factor, Andre Drummond gets burnt. And he's lost his cool a few times. He's lost his focus. He lost the Pistons single-handedly, if you ask me, that game against the Pelicans earlier this year. But yesterday, like you mentioned, 17 boards. Good for you. Brook Lopez put up 29 against you. Brook Lopez is a small center. And by small, I mean physically. You can push him out of the paint. Thing is, you have to follow him out there. And Andre Drummond did not do that at all yesterday. You mentioned the Reggie Jackson versus Ish Smith debate. It's not a debate. You go with the hardest working, best playing guy on the court every single game. And right now, that is obviously Ish Smith. It's not just a number of statistics either. Although Ish Smith, who's not a statistics guy, you look at him, he's got the better stats than Reggie Jackson. But the thing is, this team functions better when Ish Smith is distributing the ball, not killing the shot clock, not waiting until 6 seconds to try to do something. That's when this team is at its best. So now you've got to look at an uphill battle for the Pistons where Milwaukee, I was watching that game last night, they ousted the Portland Trailblazers in a late game. Trailblazers came storming back, 12-0 run late in the game. Milwaukee held on. They look to be rather cemented in that number 7 seed. Miami Heat, maybe, if you look at the last half of the season, the hottest team in basketball. They've been on fire. Start off the season, what, with 10-30, something like that.
And they've come storming
in back. They beat Phoenix last night, like you mentioned. Chicago, Rajon Rondo playing a little bit better finally. And the Pistons are the only team in this conversation that's trending downwards. I mean, you know, and you mentioned that it was a good sweep last year for the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was a hard-fought battle. It wasn't necessarily easy. It would be easy for Cleveland this year. This is a weak team. It's a disconcerted team, and they seem totally out of sorts in all facets of the game right now.
The Detroit Pistons, in their last 10 games, 5-5. I don't know what to say anymore, man. We'll see. Don't bank on the Pistons making the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our final break, and we'll wrap up the show, let's take a brief call from Robert from Lansing, who wants to chime in on the Detroit Pistons. Robert, what's up, my man? Thanks for calling in.
Hi there. How you doing?
Fantastic. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Pistons, out of the four sports teams, they're my favorite team, too, and they have been for, you know, at least 20 years. I was all right with Van Gundy at first, but I'll be honest, in the last couple of years, ever since they drafted Stanley Johnson, which I had no problem with the drafting, but he hasn't used him right. I remember watching him in Arizona. It almost seems like Van Gundy, the coach, is going up against Van Gundy, the president. Like, it's just, like, kind of dysfunctional. Like, he's, like, two different people.
Mm-hmm.
One, I don't know why they even traded for Jackson in the first place from OKC, because his teammates there did not care for him there, so why would they don't like him there? Why would they bring him here?
Right.
I don't know. It frustrates me, too, because it just doesn't seem Van Gundy was good in Orlando, because I think he took over the team that Doc Rivers had, and Doc Rivers is a phenomenal coach.
He is. I like Doc, but despite what Isaac thinks about, he hates Doc Rivers.
We won't go there.
Yeah, we won't go there, but I love Doc. I'm with you. I'm with you on that one, Robert.
Yeah. I don't know what – I'm like you. I don't know what to even say as far as the team, because it's just there's some talent there, but some of the moves that were made to bring the players in, they're not being played. Like with Johnson, if you're not going to play him and you're going to send him back and forth to the D-League,
mm-hmm.
why don't you just trade him for something and not waste talent like that? Because he's a good player, but they're not it's just not fitting. I don't know what to say, I guess.
I agree. Robert, outstanding call. Thank you so much for chiming in, my man.
Have a good one.
Yeah, I think Robert hit on a few points there. And again, I think it's very telling that the Pistons put Reggie Jackson on the market. There were just no one out there willing to take on his contract and willing to have him on their roster. I really thought a move was possibly going to be made to bring Ricky Rubio in from Minnesota. But, hey, who knows? Let's hit this final break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show with comments concerning Adam Silver sending a memo to the league that, hey, you got to stop resting the NBA superstars. It's hurting our product. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has issued a memo. Resting healthy players is a serious issue, and it will be addressed at the April 6th Board of Governors meeting out in New York. The issue came up recently with the Cleveland Cavaliers and Golden State Warriors and San Antonio Spurs all resting key players for Saturday primetime ABC game. So how do you solve this problem? Because I do believe it is a problem. And the reason I say it is a problem is because you got fans out there. It's hurting the fans. Anytime you hurt the fans, it's going to be an issue. Simple as that. They're paying their good, hard-earned money to see the superstars of the league, and they're on the bench in suits, looking fly, resting it up, and chatting with their teammates and joking around. Not cool. Not cool. You hurt the product when you do something like that. So how do you solve it? I've heard many people, you know, who have taken issue with this, throw around a few scenarios, and here's one that I think really could be enacted, Isaac. Okay, first off, and again, we only have a minute left here, but first off, when you talk about today's NBA player, I find it ridiculous that they're even complaining about rest, that they need rest. It's not the way how it was back in the day. I don't know why they're complaining, but if they're going to complain, if you want to solve this to make all parties happy, why don't you, when you look at the schedule, before the season even starts, you give fans a heads up. You know what I mean? You give teams leeway to say, okay, if you're going to rest your players, you do it on these particular dates where you may have a long road stretch or when you have a back-to-back, right? You give them leeway so you let the fans know ahead of time that, yo, LeBron may not play this game. You may not want to buy a ticket for that one.
Fans get cheap tickets, right, and then the players get rest. Everybody's happy. My theory, exactly.
Everybody wins there, right? And also, you know, if they're not going to play, why don't you make these superstars participate in every other asset of a normal game day? Even though they're not playing, why don't you make them available to the fans? They have to sign autographs. Why don't you, you know, make them go through shoot-arounds with warm-up zones so the fans at least get to see them on the court? You give them some type of responsibility even if they aren't playing.
Superstars also will want to play unless they get paid otherwise. If you don't pay them when they don't play, they will play.
We'll see what happens, folks. Take care. Same time, same place tomorrow. Be easy, people.